Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 221.
This week on the podcast, somehow Trump is bigoted enough to invite Breitbart into the White House, but okay with a man named Rentz?
Plus, Trump promises to keep none of his campaign promises in his first major interview as president-elect.
And a few medium okay things happened last week, and that's really all we have to cling to.
Plus, Democrats, not swayed by subtler hints, finally got the point by losing an easy election to a madman and rally behind a less centrist DNC chair.
And California's election is a multiple choice exam that only about 70% of us passed.
Plus, if Donald Trump and Howard Dean had a baby, it'd be the electorally baffling state of Maine.
And 2016 continues to fall apart further with the passing of Gwen Ifill. Is life even real? Are we real?
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right.
You can also find an earlier edition of this week's podcast.
The 221 prequel.
The 221 prequel, which was a special edition that we did on Wednesday to reflect on the election
And unlike many of our podcasts, which are timely,
right?
Obviously, this you can go back and listen to really until probably 2020 or until we start doing better in national elections.
Correct.
Because there's a lot of goodness in there. And it's worth listening to. If you haven't listened to it yet, you should.
And
if you listen to it now, maybe leave yourself a calendar reminder to go back and listen to it sometime in 2018.
Exactly. Because on this podcast, we probably won't be talking very much about our reactions to the presidential election.
Right. We did it.
As it happened. That's all in that podcast. We're going to talk this week about some of the news that's happened since that election, and then also some of the better things that happen on election night.
Right.
Because there were a few things that were good.
Yeah, it was mostly a dark night. And it's easy to get caught up in the darkness of it all.
But let's celebrate progress where we found it.
There were some small victories.
Exactly.
So
that's what we're going to focus on this week. If you want to know our thoughts on last week, or thoughts earlier from the week, check that out.
Something that wasn't a small victory, that was more like a giant loss for mankind, was the announcement of a couple of people that are going to be working in the Trump White House.
Yes. So on Sunday, first of all, on Sunday, announcing major news on Sunday, Trump...
Well, Sunday is the day that you want to announce inviting a white supremacist into the White House.
Correct.
So we
found out who Trump was going to name as his chief of staff.
Yes.
And then also he's created a fake position that is a chief strategist and senior counselor to the president.
Yes.
So Rentz Priebus...
This is the second fake job that Steve Bannon has had because he was the campaign CEO, which is also not a thing. So he's really
Steve Bannon is winning at fake jobs. Creating jobs that... Well, I mean, you can't hire a white supremacist to do a real job.
No, you can't.
So you just make one up.
No.
His chief of staff was officially named as Rentz Priebus, but apparently him and Steve Bannon are going to be like chief of staffing, essentially, because they were described essentially as equals in the press release.
Well, supposedly they kind of like worked this out together,
I'm hoping that Rentz Priebus was like, no, you literally can't have Steve Bannon as your chief of staff.
Right.
That's literally not a thing you can do if you want to work with anyone ever again.
Right. And that's the thing, because what you need from your chief of staff is someone who basically is, they are getting things through. They are the ones who are sort of like helping you with the day to day. They're going to be probably helping you like work with Congress. They're going to be helping you figure out, you know, who
you need somebody who people are willing to talk to in the rest of the
government. And you need somebody who has like some sort of like working knowledge of, granted, Priebus hasn't held elected position before, but he's been the RNC chair for a while. He knows the workings of Washington, which Steve Bannon doesn't. Steve Bannon just knows how to, you know, throw
fling
poo,
shit
basically.
Into the internet sphere. And also reportedly remove his children from private schools in LA because there are too many Jews there. It's a rumor I've been hearing that I believe.
Yeah,
because
I believe
he's a literal white nationalist.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, I think that, you know, a lot of people are rightly upset about this and they are rightly scared about this. And I was talking to a friend of mine who is Jewish yesterday, and she was really scared about this, and I feel like I didn't have maybe the appropriate response in her scaredness to it. And I think also it's because he's been working on the campaign since August. So,
so if you've been
following this whole time, newly horrified, I feel like that, you know, that's bad. But I mean, like, also, this is a real thing to be scared about.
Yes.
I mean, this is not a... This is not,
this
a,
is not a man this is not who a, should be...
This is not a fake thing. Like, you cannot have a person who holds these views walking around telling the president what to do as his chief strategist and counselor. Like,
well, and it adds to the sort of pile of confusing elements of this story anyway, because no one's really clear what his position is going to be, and also no one's clear what Renz Priebus's position is going to be. So there's a lot of uncertainty about creating two separate poles of power within the White House, one of which is meant as sort of red meat for the a crazy pants base,
right,
and one of which is supposed to make it possible for them to work together. But it seems like part of Trump's strategy here is going to be playing those two off against each other.
Totally.
And that means there's going to be white nationalist victories
at
some point.
Well, and white nationalists, like, I mean, the Nazi Party announced their support of Steve Bannon being in the having this position as of...
He's the guy that the KKK is holding victory rallies over his inclusion in all of this, basically.
Yes. Well, and that's the thing. You know, we keep it... I've been hearing so many things on the news in the last 24 hours where, you know, people sticking up for him are like, well, you have to look at his whole resume because he was in the Navy and he'd graduated from Harvard Business School. I'm sure the Harvard Business School people have also, like, murdered people. And you don't negate being a racist and a homophobe and an anti-Semite because somebody went to Harvard. That's just not rational thinking.
Many an anti-Semite has gone to Harvard.
I'm sure they have.
Used to be one of the charges of going to Harvard.
So we posted something on our Facebook page today that we did not write, but it was a link to something that someone had written about what you can do about this. And you should absolutely do all of the things.
It was a Rebecca Solnit thing, right?
Yeah, it was too... You know, write to your congressperson, to call your congressperson, to call out the media. That's important, too. I was listening to CNN today, and you've got all these people sticking up for them. Like, you can't...
Well, and also, you have a lot of reporting on this as if it's a regular news
story. Yeah, right, exactly. You can't report on this. It's like how Huffington Post for a long time was like only at the end of all of their articles about Trump was saying Trump is always a person who incites violence. And like, if you are a responsible person in the media or even somebody who hasn't been responsible before, which a lot of them haven't been, we're going to talk about that in this podcast. But you have to call a spade here.
Yeah.
I mean, this is not...
Well,
you
we have
can't
to be clear
on,
that Steve Bannon is not a politician who holds controversial views.
Right.
He's a white nationalist.
Right. That's his thing.
He's like a person who has like incited hate.
Correct.
And violence and used, you know, media, but in the most corporate sort of like moneyed sense of it.
Right. The only reason Steve Bannon exists as a person that we are talking about right now is because he has stoked these things.
Exactly.
Before. I mean, it's not like he came from Harvard Business School and happens to be a white nationalist. He is a white nationalist who went to Harvard Business School.
Exactly.
It's not the reverse, and there is a difference.
Yes, exactly. No, and so this is concerning on a lot of levels. It's concerning. I mean, I was talking to somebody who used to watch The Apprentice, which I was never a fan of. And they were sort of like, this fits perfectly in line with his sort of governing ethos, if you will. He sort of, you know, he belittles people. He does that in an attempt to sort of make them competitive with other people it's all for his own sort of like attention and you know, aggrandizement or like it all is about, you know, making him bigger and better and whatever. But he, like, this seems like a strategy for a very insecure man to have, you know, have sort of an infight to create so that he maintains control of the situation.
Totally.
And that's sort of concerning because there's a reason there's only one chief of staff in the White House.
Right.
They work very closely with the president.
Yes.
There's a reason that they, you know, that someone with a lot of legislative experience gets that job.
Right.
It's because they understand how the process works.
Yeah, somebody
so that
who
when the
knows
president
Washington
is like, can we do blah, blah, blah? They're like, here's what we can do.
Yeah.
You know, the sort of inclusion of somebody whose whole purpose there is to make bigots think that they have a guy in, you know, in the office is not a great thing.
No, it's not.
It's not ideal.
No.
And it's confusing because it sort of doesn't, you know, if what we see in the Trump White House is what we saw with the Trump campaign, Renz Priebus is out of there in 6 months.
Oh yeah, how many
we're just
times?
I mean,
get
how many
new
times
campaign
exactly?
Managers,
like how many
or four?
How many chief of staffs is he going to go through? But you know who's going to stay? Is Steve Bannon.
Probably.
I mean, that's the problem. There's precedent for what he's doing.
Well, and that's what
here.
Everybody said about Steve Bannon, too, was that Steve Bannon was ultimately the person who, like, became Trump's go-to on that campaign more than even Kellyanne Conway. He was the person who supposedly had Trump's ear. He was the person who was supposedly the one who was able to get Trump to stop tweeting. I mean, he was really sort of like the Trump soothsayer, if you will. And like, you don't want the president's soothsayer to be a person who has the beliefs that Steve Bannon does.
Exactly.
That's not great.
So the Renz Priebus pick was a decision more urged by like the Mitch McConnells and the Paul Ryans of the world.
And it does make more sense, obviously.
And that makes more sense. But it was, I think that it's sort of, he's going to be a figurehead in this. This is not his office. He's just a guy who's going to be charged essentially with taking the horrible things that Trump and Steve Bannon come up with together and figuring out how to sell them to the legislative branches. Going to be a mess.
Yeah.
Trump also had his first major interview since being declared president-elect on 60 Minutes this weekend, and that was fascinating.
Yeah, it really was.
It was fascinating for a lot of reasons, and one of them was how jarringly different his behavior was than it has been at any point in this process.
Totally.
And I don't say that to sort of lend credence to the idea that maybe he'll be okay when he gets into government and maybe it will be fine. It was just more off-puttingness on a cake of off-puttingness.
The icing on it.
It was it's like of course he knows how to behave like a human being when he needs to. But the point is that he also doesn't when he needs to. Like the point is that this is like just another kind of unpredictableness for him.
Yeah.
It also made clear, first of all, he basically openly admitted in the interview that he has no intention of doing any of the things he promised, except for a few things that he said in contradiction to other things. Like, you know, they asked him about gay marriage. And as I sort of suspected, because he couldn't give two shits about gay marriage, he was kind of like, that's been settled by the courts. But I don't care.
Right.
But he somehow thinks that the fact that Roe v. Wade is also a court case doesn't make abortion settled by the courts.
I know. It's so funny because, like, they had that conversation sort of like as one conversation because they were talking
about
about Supreme Court justices. And he was like, well, I'm very pro-choice. So, you know, or I mean pro-life. He's not pro-choice. He was at one point.
Yeah,
but remember when he had like six different thoughts about abortion within the span of about 40? So they asked him about that. And he said, well, I'm going to appoint somebody who's pro-life. And then she was like, well, Leslie Stahl was like, well, then what's going to... He was like, well, it'll go back to the states. And she was like, but then states are going to be passing these laws that they've been passing. And he was like, well, they'll just have to go to another state.
Yeah, women will have to cross, you know, go to other states to get abortions. Yeah. And she was like, so you're saying that it's acceptable that women have to cross state lines to get abortions? And then, like, in the same breath, she asks him what he's going to do about gay marriage. And he was like, that's unsettled by the courts. Oh, good.
He has a real working knowledge of how the Supreme
Court
works,
doesn't it? At least the LGBT community can really rest easy. It was such a confusingly, like, inarticulate interview.
It was.
Like, it reminded me that he's not somebody who
has
thoughts at the highest level.
It was less bombastic.
Yes.
But it was not more thoughtful.
He seemed literally just in shock.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is
supposedly he was in shock. They asked him about that in that interview, too, where they were like, so apparently you just went quiet when you found out the results on Tuesday night, because that's all the reports were that he literally was just like, and I'm sure it was probably because he was like, oh, well, shit, I got to do this now.
Yeah. By the way, this is not a man who wants to be the president.
Oh, I think I saw some story today where he's talking about not living there full time.
He's already wanting to spend 3 to 4 nights in New York and the weekends at Mar-a-Lago. He's been trying to take a play out of the Bloomberg book.
Sure.
But I should remind our listeners that, because Bloomberg, you know, didn't live at Gracie Mansion, which is the mayor's mansion in New York, chose to live in his own place, chose to take only $1 a year salary.
Right.
He still lived in the city that he was the mayor of, though. His own house was in New York City. This is not, Trump doesn't have a house in Washington that he's talking about. He's talking about literally living in a different city than the capital as the president of the United States. He also was saying he's only going to take $1 a year as salary. And while I realize that Bloomberg got away with that, I continue to maintain that we should not allow our elected officials to not take the salary. You should know that you have taxpayer money in your hand. Your own personal wealth should not be more important to you than the job that you're doing. So we should pay you to do that job. You shouldn't need to care about your investments while you're the president.
Yeah.
You shouldn't be able to care about your investments while you're the president. Yeah. And so if you only take $1 a year salary, I don't care if you're a fucking rich man. That still means that your finances are more important to your livelihood than the job that the American people have elected you to do.
I hadn't thought about it like that.
You absolutely should have to take this out.
Yeah.
You should, that it's, you know, it's a meaningless sum in his book and in taxpayers' books, but he should have to take it.
Yeah.
I'm not, he shouldn't get away with that bullshit.
Yeah.
Bloomberg did that and I was against it then and I'm against it now. But he really spoke about the election like it was a literal game.
Yes.
Like he talked about it like he had won a game against Hillary Clinton, because now he's all like, oh, she was a great adversary. She really put up a good fight. She's a smart lady and she's tough and I really respect her for that. She couldn't be nicer.
Right.
And Bill couldn't be nicer. And Obama's real, we had great chemistry. Great guy. That's really right. great guy.
Great chemistry.
Do you think you were elected in opposite, you know, in as a, you know, to as a kind of a renouncement of his, you know, of his presidency? No, I think we just, the American people just wanted something different.
Like, I found that to be fascinating, actually, because when she asked that, I was just waiting for him to immediately say yes without a...
That was the right answer, was yes.
Oh, well, if you're Donald Trump, right.
I mean, but, if you're a reasonable person, no, but
the fact that he said no made me think that he at least partially understood the nuance of why he won it. But
I don't
maybe
think
he
that that's it at all. No? I think okay, that he right. literally viewed it as a giant game... That he had just, like, he won the game of chess they were playing. Now he's the victor.
Yeah.
He can walk around saying, it was a great win. It was a really great, big,
well,
major,
he's a winner.
Major win. Exactly. Yeah. But I don't think, and I think, you know, you got to say that it was a nasty game and we were playing the game. But now you got, you know, I don't think that he understands that he has to keep playing the game.
Right.
That's part of this deal, because the right answer to that question is yes.
Yeah.
Yes, this was, you know, the American people wanted something different. They wanted a change. They weren't happy, and so they elected me. That is the right political answer to that question. I don't care if you're a reasonable person or not. If you got elected running Donald Trump's campaign, you don't come into that 60 Minutes interview and be like, no, I think it was just, you know, American people just felt like voting for me.
Well,
like,
and I think also, like,
that's not it.
It's going to be...
We ran a great campaign. I don't fucking care.
Yeah. Well, I also think that if he carries on like he's... carrying on for much longer, I think he's going to have a lot of restless supporters on his hands, too.
Real restless.
Because he is talking, I mean, you know, he appointed Steve Bannon, so that'll make him happy. But, I mean, you know, he talked about not building a wall. He said that it would be fine
offense
if some of it
fine.
Was a fence. He said that they were only going to focus on deporting the actual rapists and murderers. Who are the people who are supposed to be deported. So basically, that's not even a change of strategy.
No, that's Hillary Clinton had that plan, too.
He was talking, President Obama has been having that plan. They call
him
the deporter-in-chief.
Criminals. He's
so
deporting everyone.
He talked about all of the things that he liked that are in Obamacare.
Yeah.
You know, I think that there could be, and hey, that's all fine and good by
fine
me.
And good
I mean,
me. But you know, but it's literally, he's going to sway with the wind, because the reason he was saying that is because he just spoke to Obama. And I know Obama's not stupid enough to walk in there and try to insult his pride. So I'm sure Obama just sort of, like, in a clever way explained why some of those protections were in place for Obamacare. And I'm sure that Trump heard that and was like, yeah, that's a good idea. And I'm sure that as soon as Renz Priebus comes to him and says, we got to get rid of it, he's going to be like, yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Like, he's going to blow in every direction.
Totally.
He's going to repeat whatever he heard. This is a man who once said in a debate that abortions were happening 4 to 5 days before birth.
Right.
That's a C-section, and it's illegal. Like, this is not a man who knows much about any of the things that he knows about. And he also doesn't even know the context of a lot of these conversations. No. So...
And you know what? He doesn't care to learn either.
He's not going to fucking learn. I have a theory, though, which is that Obama's going to be on his speed dial, because...
He said that he would...
Well,
I don't know if it was in this interview, but
no,
he said that he was going to continue to consult with him.
Yeah. Uh-huh. But I feel like if you're dealing with a narcissist, the narcissist needs a sort of secret mentor. If you know, the narcissist can't admit that they're in over their head. He's got these two factions that he's creating in his own house in order to destroy each other.
It's going
to
be overwhelming.
It's going to be very overwhelming.
Yeah.
And he's going to need someone to call to be like, what do I do?
Yeah.
And Obama's going to be the guy that's like, fuck this. But
he can't
step out of it.
No. Obama's probably going to be more apt to help him than, let's say, George Bush would.
Exactly.
Too. I mean, he's not going to have very many previous presidents that are going to want to be on his speed dial.
No,
not
exactly.
That Obama's going to want to be on his speed dial either, but he might actually feel
Obama has an investment in at least not destroying the nation.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, some of his legacy surviving this would be
totally.
Nice.
Yeah.
And so, but I this is, you know, this is so interesting, because this is like he's like an empty vessel whose only current the only things he contains right now are thoughts about himself. And so, like, he's going to just, he's going to be so confusing.
Whoever can fill him up fastest.
Well, he's not fillable.
Well, right.
Whoever can wash through him.
Right, exactly.
With the most frequency.
Somebody can fill him up, and then 5 minutes later, somebody else can fill him up.
Whoever spoke to him last. Right. You just always have to be the guy that spoke to him last. Right. Because this is going to be a lot to keep up with, and it's never going to make any sense. And while he has these thoughts, things are going to happen behind, you know, things are going to happen because of the people that he's in bed with that are not going to be good. We still have a Republican House and a Republican Senate.
Yeah.
We have Rens Priebus in there who's going to have some level of his Trump's ear. Things are going to happen that shouldn't happen because most of the people who are going to be the last person to have spoken to him are going to be those people.
Right, exactly. And that's not great.
That's not great.
No.
So if we really want to help, we need to make sure that Democrats call him a lot.
Yeah, exactly.
So like, just a chat.
I know.
If Harry Reid in his retirement has some time.
Yeah, right?
Just call him up for a chat.
Yeah.
Just let him know your thoughts.
Or Bernie.
Bernie?
Trump has acted like maybe he likes him a few times.
I have a theory about that, though, too. Okay. I have a lot of theories. Suddenly, me being a New Yorker is coming more in handy than it's ever come before.
Oh, you
and
think
by
he's
the way,
gonna...
it's real convenient
being Bernie
a New Yorker because it's the greatest. No. I think that Bernie and him are not going to have a great relationship because I think that Bernie is going to sound like too many men of his father's era. Oh. I mean, not that, you know, they're about the same
they're
age.
About the same
it's
age,
not that they're of a different generation, but I think they consider themselves of a different generation. Bernie's of a different tradition in New York than Trump is. And Trump has always tried to kind of like pretend he's like this youthful, rich guy that like hangs out with these beautiful women and stuff like that. I think that this sort of...
Yeah, that's like the anti-Bernie.
It's the humble sort of like Brooklyn socialist thing is not going to sit well with him. And Bernie, unlike Obama, who's going to have the advantage of being able to outsmart Trump, Trump's going to be able to read Bernie real easily.
Yeah.
Because Bernie...
There are some
talking
things
to guys like Bernie is...
True.
Bernie can be really straight with him probably.
Yeah.
But
well, and there
talking
are
to him
some
is not going to be as easy.
And there are some things that they both want to do.
Well, sure. No, and I think that to that end, they would be good allies. But I don't think that they're going to communicate that well because I think that unlike every, you know, when you have someone like Trump who everyone's just trying to outwit.
Yeah.
Someone like Bernie's not going to be able to outwit him, not because he's not smarter than Trump, but because Trump is going to know how to read him really well.
Mm. I can see that. Yeah.
Like, it was so weird, by the way, to hear such a thick Queens accent coming from a president-elect.
Oh.
That was so. I never thought in my life I would hear that. That's weird.
Right. Yeah.
But it kind of reminded me that there are some like cultural politics of being a native New Yorker that are going to come into play in weird ways in this, you know, and in especially when you have an empty vessel president.
Yeah.
That are going to be fascinating to watch.
Right.
Because I think that truly our best chance is everyone talking to him but outwitting him.
Yeah.
Which means I think that takes all the New Yorkers off the table, and the New Yorkers are the best ones. So I don't know what to do about that.
I don't either.
The kids also spoke, and so did Melania in this interview.
I didn't get that far because I couldn't take much of it. But
those boys are such sneak mongers. I hate them.
They're also just.
And they have dumb hair, and they have hair.
I know.
The only person with good hair in that whole family is Ivanka, and her hair's not that special. It's just fine.
I know.
It's like the only thing I'm going to talk about for the rest of this election season is men's hair. I'm going to make it so that by the end of the 4 years, misogyny is talking about men's hair only instead of their brains.
Yeah, I like it.
I'm only going to talk about how men look.
Yeah.
You know, I'll talk about what Ivanka says.
Sure.
Because she's the only one with any thoughts, and they're not great thoughts at the moment.
No,
they're not.
Sometimes they're fine.
Well, she sounds fine when she speaks, but I'm just like, you can't. You're not speaking in a vacuum. You can say these things all you want, but you spoke right after your father and your two idiot brothers. So, like, I don't know if you think that we're, like, too dumb to hear to hear the contradiction, but, like, we're not.
Yeah.
But so in any case, things are, it's weird because now this is, like, we're almost a week in now, and now it's, like, now we're a nation who's going to have Donald Trump as the president.
That's right.
Like I'm past the sort of like panic shock phase and moving into a new phase that's just like it's sort of equal parts anger and bemusement. Because everything that's about to happen when viewed from a distance is going to be hilarious.
Right. Unless it's
be
terrifying.
Terrible.
Right. Yes.
It's not going to be great.
No.
I don't want to have to think this.
Right.
But, like, the way that, like, the brain trust lives of the world are going to survive is because this is going to be bananas in a way that
we
that
no
only
one, we
television comedy
no
had
seen.
Been up until now.
Right.
I mean, this is going to be crazy.
Yeah.
So I've been already medium bemused just listening to Trump speak as if he has something to say.
Yeah.
That is something I never thought I'd have to do. No, here we are.
Exactly.
One bright note. We're going to move into some good... bad news up ahead, but first, an item of good news.
Yes.
Bernie Sanders decided that he was going to be the sort of like the person who named the next DNC chair, essentially.
And why shouldn't he?
Endorsed Keith Ellison. And I thought, okay, they're all going to get... And we're going to end up with Howard Dean, was my thought.
Exactly. Which but even Howard Dean, if he would have chosen to run a 50-state strategy, would have been a step up.
Absolutely. But it wouldn't have been enough of a step up to get back those voters we lost.
No.
Suddenly, all the Democratic leadership fell in line with Bernie, though. And
who would have ever thought?
I'm pretty sure we're about to have Keith Ellison be our DNC chair.
Right, because he even announced today that he was going to run, but not within days. I mean, this happened late last week, because it was after the election.
No, this
and
was like...
we sort of thought to ourselves, this
that'd be nice.
Could be interesting.
Because
it's not until March. We signed a petition. And then within literally 48 hours over the weekend, we had Harry Reid, we had Chuck Schumer, we had basically all of the power players in the Democratic Party had endorsed this. So we
had endorsed Keith Ellison.
Keith Ellison, who's
a progressive congressman.
Big progressive.
Who endorsed Bernie in the primary.
Yes, who was on his platform.
Right,
committee
he was on his platform committee. You remember?
DNC.
He was one of the people that got named to the platform. Like, this is a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, Bernie basically just installed the next leader of the DNC.
Well, they should fucking have let him.
They
he's been doing a lot of press recently talking about how embarrassed he is that his party lost touch with the working class.
Yes.
He's being like, I grew up working class, and I'm so embarrassed that my party didn't know how to talk to them this time.
Right.
And good for him.
Yeah.
That somebody's got to go around and tell those people that we know that we fucked up.
I know.
So that
he's
they can
been doing it
get over their
fairly eloquently, which is good, because I think that a lot of his supporters are doing a lot of I told you so's. We sort of kind of did that on Thursday.
Well,
but I mean, you know, he is, I think, saying
they faced such a nasty backlash early. Like, there was, it got too nasty for his supporters to not walk around saying, I told you so.
Exactly. But he has been doing it sort of fairly eloquently.
Yes.
But he's absolutely right, though. And the only way to sort of get those voters back is to tell them that you're with them, and Keith Ellison will do that.
Exactly.
And Keith Ellison also, I'm sure, understand. Oh, the other thing that Bernie has been saying is that we need to make sure that we're running everywhere.
Yeah, we need to run people in every district.
Right, and that was
one
of the...
He's a big 50-state strategy guy. I'm sure
that
because of that, Keith Ellison, who was, you know, one of...
Well, that was when the Democrats
weren't
sucking, was during that time.
That was a great... It worked.
I don't know
why we abandoned it.
I don't either.
You don't even need as much money when you're doing that, because the press compounds itself.
Let me tell you why. Because Debbie Wasserman Schultz is
a fucking
hack.
Asshole.
And I mean that in all seriousness.
Yeah.
I really don't like that woman.
No. Let's burn your picture with her.
I know. Seriously.
How can you... Can you have unmet her
somehow?
I
know. I looked so happy in that picture.
I know.
Wearing my fanny pack at the Iowa State Fair.
It's like... God. Simpler times. Meanwhile...
Yeah.
So, the bad news is we lost the Senate.
Close.
51-50, unless this Louisiana race takes a very interesting turn.
Right.
Because Louisiana does a runoff if no one gets a simple majority. They were running about 800 people.
But even still, we lost the presidency, so it would...
Right.
I mean, the best we could do...
Mike Pence is where it break. You know, where it would go down.
Right.
But it would be exciting to have a 50-50 split.
Would be.
It'd be more exciting than a 51-49 split.
It would be. Yes.
I donated to that guy's campaign today.
I know. You said that.
I was just like, I can't live with myself if I'm not doing... So I donated to the Southern Poverty Law Center. I donated to his campaign. His name is Sherwood something.
And the ACLU. And your mom
did that.
Or
me and my mom made a deal. She donated to the ACLU. I donated to the Southern Poverty Law Center.
That.
She donated to Planned Parenthood. I signed up to volunteer with them. Today I was just like, I got to get moving,
man.
You know?
Yeah.
But so... And our beloved Russ Feingold lost.
Oh, man.
I'm so pissed about the Republican sweep of the Midwest, mostly over this.
God, I know.
Like, come on.
I know.
And this is the thing that I'm always suddenly like, oh, right. Like, they used to have, they have a real tradition of progressivism in those states.
Yeah.
So when we lose those states, that's a big statement. These are not states that have to... These are states that voted for Obama by big margins.
I know.
In many cases, these are probably people that voted for Obama
by
big
margins.
But
and the thing
this is the region of that brings us all of our greatest you know, progressive politicians aside from essentially Vermont. This is where Paul Wellstone is from this region. Yeah, Sherrod Brown is from this region. He's from Ohio. Yeah. Russ Feingold is from Wisconsin. This is a region with like a real tradition of like true progressivism.
Yeah. Well, and this
the union movement started in this
fucking
state.
Well, and that's what I was just about to say, because I feel so bad for Russ Feingold, because he really lost, because, you know, we talked last week on the podcast, but turnout was very down all over the place. And specifically in Wisconsin, it was really down by like over a quarter of a million people. And Russ Feingold is a person who would have stood up for those workers.
Yes.
But there was just such a drag from the top of the ticket that affected turnout that he really got hosed here. And I don't want to blame his loss entirely on that. But I mean, there has to be some of that anyway, because like when you really, if you're a Wisconsin voter and you're really deciding, oh, I'm a worker and you know, I work and some of the jobs that I used to have have left and you're looking at a ticket and you're trying to decide whether to vote for Russ Feingold or Ron fucking Johnson, then like the clear answer is Russ Feingold.
Yeah. There. Like couldn't be clearer.
So, I mean,
because they had almost an opposite thing going than the top of the ticket.
Totally.
Where, you know, Ron Johnson was the candidate of big business and the corporate lobby.
Right.
And as much as obviously Donald Trump is big business and is the corporate lobby.
He was never claiming to be.
But that was not what he was running on. And Hillary Clinton was tagged with that from the get-go. So you had the issue of the top of the ticket representing the opposite things.
Yeah, we talk, you know, pollsters were talking, well, they were wrong about everything, but they were talking a lot about ticket splitting.
Right.
Where people were going to vote for Hillary and then they were going to vote for the Republican. And if you lived in Wisconsin, you should have done the reverse of that.
Exactly.
Honestly. Yeah. I mean,
you should never have voted for Trump.
You shouldn't have voted for Trump in the first place, but if you were going to vote for Trump, you should have voted for Feingold.
Right, exactly. Especially if you're voting for Trump over trade issues and other working class issues like that. So that was some bad news. Zephyr Teachout lost. That was bad news.
I mean,
I forgot to mention that what's her face from Seattle won though.
Oh yeah, Jayapal.
Yeah,
yeah.
So that was good. That was a Bernie Krat.
Yeah.
One, but yeah, Zephyr lost.
That's too bad for Zephyr Teachout.
Majorly outspent in that district. Totally. I think, you know, it's positive that that district could be a Democratic district.
Yeah, I mean, she should run again, or she should. She should run for statewide office. I mean, she
or at least now they have a Democratic organization in that district, which they did not at all because it was redistricted and it was a Republican district and it was confusing and no one knew who anyone was in the district. Yeah. So now at least they kind of have an organizing.
But her political career doesn't by any means have to be.
No. I don't think it will be.
It's too bad that she lost.
Yeah, but that's
obviously
unfortunate. Yeah. But some good news.
Yeah.
Kamala Harris won.
Yes.
So we now have another hopefully great senator on the way to replace Barbara Boxer.
Female, great senator.
Another female senator. Mm-hmm. And first Indian American senator, I think, or Indian a woman at least. And we have Catherine Cortez Masto, who beat Joe Heck in Nevada.
Yes.
First Hispanic woman elected to the Senate. Yep. Kelly Ayotte lost.
Oh, good riddance.
New Hampshire did something medium right.
Something. Isn't that weird that that went how it did?
Yeah.
Sort of
bizarre.
Yeah, because
they split their ticket.
Yeah.
That was confused, but that was such a close race on both counts.
It was, yeah.
And remember, both of them had won statewide office fairly recently.
Well, yeah, for sure.
So
that was going to be a huge race.
That was a confusing one.
There was a lot of money spent on that race too.
Joe Arpaio lost his sheriff's seat.
Thank God.
They literally had like students were walking out that day in support of getting rid of him.
Yeah.
And then I don't think that we have an outcome yet in the North Carolina governor's race, but
it looks for all the world like that he lost. I think it looks like he was behind when that
recount
was initiated.
So Pat McCrory might also be gone. So the transgender hater McCrory can potentially take a hike.
Yeah.
California, one of only 8 states that moved to the left instead of the right this year.
Yeah.
Because we get it.
This election really made me, many things make me feel happy to be living in California.
Right.
But I mean, in the face of this last election, I feel really good here.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah. Even Orange County went blue.
First time in like a bazillion years.
Yeah. I mean, that's exciting times.
Yeah. Well, that's like a Republican stronghold, Orange County.
Yeah. That's where there are
Staten
rich, Island.
Rich white people go.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
right.
What
that's
Orange
that's
County
not our
is.
Staten Island, but I mean, it's
no,
our
but,
Republican
right, yeah.
stronghold.
You're right. Exactly.
In this city. And so that we We had some good news with the props. We had some disappointing news. Bag. We didn't get rid of the death penalty. And in fact, we sped up the death penalty process like a bunch of idiots.
I can't believe... how many times do we have to try this, you guys? Like,
We should have to try it every year.
I agree.
If you're going to be a state that kills people, you should have to agree to do it every single year.
I totally agree.
You should...
Let's keep voting on this until that... Yeah. Until we get it right.
Exactly. Because, well, I don't care if they want to put it on the year after we get it right, too.
No, like, I don't care.
If you are going to be a state that uses the power of the government to murder people, you should have to check in with us every year to see if we're still good with that. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But we did vote in the cigarette tax. We voted down that condoms and porn one that was stupid and made you able to sue anyone that you wanted. We did not pass the prescription drug prop that Bernie campaigned for.
That was a bummer.
That was disappointing.
Yep.
It was because all these vet groups got involved.
I know.
I don't like that.
Well, and obviously the drug industry.
Well, but it was paid for by the drug industry, but they were basically using veterans.
Yes, correct.
Like, this was not a bill that was going to affect the drug prices paid by veterans, but they basically like used veterans
to say it, right,
with
exactly.
big pharma money to be like, don't.
Because all we were doing was tying other drug prices to the prices that they are
already
paying.
We weren't changing the prices they were paying.
No, exactly.
So whatever. We did not repeal the death penalty, but we did vote in that prop that was going to give us stricter gun control measures. We voted for the one that was going to speed up parole for nonviolent offenders.
Yes,
we voted to legalize marijuana.
Sure did.
We voted for the correct plastic bag prop.
Yes,
there were two. One of them was
not
the one.
We voted no on the correct one. I mean, we got somehow mysteriously we were able to get those things right. Which, if you didn't do your research, you would have no idea which one you were supposed to do. But we still fucked up the death penalty.
We can't be trusted.
It's upsetting.
We cannot be trusted.
No, we can't.
Some other good prop news, Arizona, Colorado, and Washington all raised their minimum wage. Colorado is going to $12 by 2020, Arizona went up to $12, and Washington went up to $13.50. Washington gets it.
They sure do.
They're not, they were like, screw you, Hillary Clinton, we're going to go to $13.50,
right?
Try to stop us.
Yeah.
Ranked choice voting won in Maine.
Yeah, this is
exciting,
guys.
No one knows if it's actually ever going to get instituted.
I know, right?
They kind of expect a lot of challenges on this.
Yeah, constitutional issues potentially, although it's already being used
in Portland they use it
for city offices. So
basically, voters there, according to this prop, for statewide office of any sort, or anything that's not the presidency, essentially, will rank their choices, and then they'll essentially, if no one gets a clear majority, they'll reassign votes to whoever was everyone's second choice.
And this is a thing that third parties have been pushing for a long time.
This is a great idea.
Yeah, because basically, what
then
you
can
is,
vote for whoever you want.
What happens is you rank your top four ballot choices, or however many people there are on the ballot, and then if no candidate wins an outright majority, then the election outcome is determined by additional rounds. They basically keep throwing out whoever's in last place until they get to some whoever it is that has the majority by basically how you've ranked
people. I don't think ever have to vote for anyone. So, like, you're not required to list everyone, I don't think.
Oh, no, you probably don't have to rank everyone.
I think you can rank only people that you would actually be comfortable voting for.
Right, but basically this sort of allows you to not be concerned about voting for what people would call a spoiler. You and I take issue with that idea anyway. But, I mean, like, you... In this
but like,
setup
if the
here,
presidential
you could vote,
election is a great idea, is a great point
of
reference.
You could have voted for Jill Stein and then picked Hillary Clinton as your second choice.
Exactly.
And then if Jill Stein didn't win on the first ballot or came in last, she would have got thrown out. And then your vote would have went to Hillary Clinton because it was the second choice. And then
no one ever wins more than 50% of the vote.
And you wouldn't have had to have worried about getting yelled at by your friends on Facebook
for
voting for Jill Stein. And everything all would have been right with the world.
Yeah. Could have just moved on from there.
So
lived your life.
We like this. We're in favor of this. And we hope Maine can figure it out with their constitution and start doing this.
Another Howard Dean brainchild. He's not great on policy, but he's really good on procedure.
Yeah.
That's where he's progressive.
Yeah. And they won't be doing this for president.
No.
This is only for statewide offices.
But it's like how we do jungle primaries for everyone
but
the president. You have to be different for the president because that's a
national
election.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
But this would be a great way to do the national elections if we wanted
sure
to look
be.
Into it, guys.
Yep.
You know? Yep. Meanwhile, the media has continued to do lots of hand-wringing about why it missed everything. At this point, it's mostly taken the form of the New York Times writing repeated letters about how great they are, as if to like remind, we get that the media did something wrong, but we are really dedicated to our craft and we're great. Like, go fuck yourselves.
Yeah, exactly.
I can't with you anymore. But so they did a little analysis on what they thought went wrong. But I know that we talked about it a little in our sort of special edition last podcast.
Yeah.
Because the media really is in a weird place right now.
They are.
They really, like, a lot of media, a lot of writers, a lot of pundits, like, truly don't understand how this narrative came together that said that Trump couldn't win and wouldn't win.
Yeah.
And also, you know, there's a lot of discussion about what the responsibilities are. The Times, one of their many letters and op-eds addressing the, or editorials addressing this, was about, you know, their responsibility to cover the news impartially, and that, you know, that's a mission they need to remember. I would contend that they needed to remember that during the Democratic primaries.
Yes.
During the general election.
Yep.
I mean, they weren't doing any of that. They're, you know, but they thought they were. It's part of it is that, you know, the sort of larger knowledge that we all pretend is the official knowledge is all you really have to work
on. Well, and I think
it's like
that
if you don't speak Japanese, you don't necessarily have a frame of reference for things that are going on in Japan because you see it through the lens of English. Like
right,
that,
exactly.
It's like, you know.
Well, and I think that, you know, we talked some on the podcast that we did last week after the election about, you know, sort of the bubble that sort of we get caught up in. I mean, not the royal we, just sort of especially, you know, people in California, liberals, I think people just like
in
general.
Personally,
like,
we're a little pissed because we live in the bubbliest bubble ever and we still fucking saw this coming.
But I think actually the real bubbliest bubble is
the media bubble.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's
so,
a lot of, you know, I've definitely seen some things about, you know, from media being like, maybe we should actually like hit the streets and like try to interview people and stuff.
Yeah.
Because that became its own sort of self-referential cycle. And I hate to be a person who is sort of like, you can't trust the media, because that's a right-wing talking point.
Right.
But see how this election sort of...
But you can say that they need to be doing a better job.
Well, exactly. And also, this election really, you know, we talked about this months ago. It's really clarified for me some of the bias in media that I was consuming, thinking it was, you know, fine, you know, unbiased reporting.
Yeah.
You know, The Times is the paper of record. I've always, you know, I understand that to some degree they appear to have a liberal bias because they care about facts.
Right.
But like, I saw bias in the Times in a way that I was kind of like, that is interesting, because if you can't trust the Times, then I'm not really sure who there is to trust, because you can't trust Huffington Post.
No.
They're openly biased.
Right.
You know, you can read Huffington Post news so that you know what the liberal universe is talking about, just like you can read the Drudge Report and find out what the conservative universe is talking about.
Yeah.
But those are not news.
I think also they really gave too much. I think sometimes truly, I think we mistakenly confuse bias with, you know, facts. Because I think that so much of the media was in their attempt to be unbiased. You know, like we were just talking about Steve Bannon earlier today. You know, you would... I'm sure there are a lot of media saying, well, we're not going to report this in a biased way. So we're not, but you still have to, tell people that Steve Bannon is a white nationalist.
Right.
Because that's
the
reality.
Fact.
And that is not bias.
Right.
And I think that like, you know, we treated Donald Trump like every other candidate who has ever run for president.
Right.
And he was
not
and he should have been treated as such, because like, that's not real. And I think that they try to walk this line, and I think sometimes they maybe shouldn't actually try so hard to walk the line, because
it's
their job to report reality. And I think that they got caught up in ratings.
Mm-hmm.
They got caught
definitely
up.
Definitely that.
And that's not what they should be doing.
No. So. No, you don't have a free press, by the way, if corporate profits are tied to how many eyeballs that press gets.
That's right.
So that's another thing.
Yeah.
But all this is by way of saying, if you're going to read Huffington Post, great. I do it every day.
Right.
But you should probably read the Drudge Report, too.
You should. Well, and I think that, I do honestly think that's important, because, like, you have to, you know, we talked about that a little bit last week, but you have to know, I think the only way that we can get anywhere sort of, like, as a country collectively, and also even just as a party, is to know who the people are that we are dealing with.
Yeah, well, and also to know what they're talking about and what their priorities are.
And throughout this whole election cycle, we just chose not to do that.
Yeah.
And that's, I feel like, a big part of how we ended up where we are right now. And like,
which is not a good place.
It's not a good place.
It's not good here.
Yeah.
In final news, if 2016 wasn't just like shitty enough.
God, I know.
Gwen Ifill died today.
I didn't even know she was sick, but
apparently
she had cancer.
I know, nobody knew.
She was great. I mean,
yeah,
she was very well respected from both sides. You saw a lot of,
yes,
you know, outpouring from, I saw a tweet that Paul Ryan had sent. I mean, like, people liked Gwen Ifill and thought that Gwen Ifill did a good job.
Yes.
She'd done some
vice presidential debates. Yeah.
I mean, she was on it, Gwen Ifill.
She was only 61.
I know, so sad.
That's young.
Yeah.
in case you needed a Mac.
But that was just sort of like, as soon as I saw that, you texted me that, actually. Yeah. And I was like, what?
I know. I saw it on Twitter and I was like, and then I saw it again and I was like, God
death hoax.
Damn it.
But no.
Well, I mean, why would there be? It wasn't. This year everyone's dying, so like, why not? Why would there be?
Yeah, Leonard Cohen died on Friday, yeah. As if that wasn't terrible.
I mean, enough. It's been a mess, you guys. Yeah, it's been a mess. It's been a real mess.
Yeah.
But so that's the news this week.
Yes.
We will be back next week with only one podcast.
That's right.
Again, if you want to hear our thoughts on the election itself, on the selection of Trump, and what you know we sort of saw happen and how we felt about it
daily.
Yes, exactly. there's. The podcast right before this one is
the prequel to this one.
Special edition podcast. Yeah. It is available on iTunes and Stitcher and all the places our podcast is available. And you should listen to that.
That's right.
But until next week, try to survive. Go to a Trump protest if you need to.
Yeah,
you know,
sure,
if that'll make you feel better, why not?
Yeah. Just
get out there.
Yeah.
And if it won't make you feel better, don't bother. You know, do you right now.
Right.
Do whatever you need to do to take care of yourself. Yeah. But we'll talk to you next week.
Bye.